Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Jesse Lubinsky. Jesse is currently the Chief Learning Officer for Ready Learner One LLC. He is an educational technologist, teacher, certified school administrator, and doctoral student based out of Westchester County in New York. Prior to entering the learning space, he was a technology consultant for Fortune 500 companies, specializing in network engineering and software development projects. Jesse is a co-author of Reality Bites, Innovative Learning Using Augmented and Virtual Reality, and the Esports Education Playbook, Empowering Every Learner Through Inclusive Gaming. He has also been published in the books The Chromebook Infused Classroom, 100 No-Nonsense Things That All Teachers Should Stop Doing, High-Tech Teaching Success, A Step-by-Step Guide to Using Innovative Technology in Your Classroom, and Fueled by Coffee and Love, A Brew Perspective. Welcome to the podcast, Jesse.
Thanks for having me. See, I've lived 1,000 lives. I just have to keep doing more, so I keep building that up. So the whole show is just a recitation of my resume. Yeah.
Well, I've been following you for a while. We've been connected on Twitter, and you're also one of the 100 Stop authors, the hashtag 100 Stop. So we'll talk a little bit about that as well, but I'll start out with the question I always start out with is, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
So yeah, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, and I was like, wow, I have a bunch of different directions I can go with this question, because, you know, I was thinking we're in New York, we're still kind of coming out of those first few weeks of the beginning of the school year. And that brought me back to like both being a classroom teacher as well as being a technology director and kind of the hectic nature of the start of the school year. But I think where I landed on this question was thinking back to my first couple of years of teaching. Mm-hmm. You know, I was a career changer. So I went into the classroom from the technology space. I did the New York City Teaching Fellows Program. So they threw me into a classroom on day one. I had no teacher education prep classes. Mm-hmm. They were like, you'll learn as you go along. And I just remember those first few years, I would be up to like 1:30 in the morning doing lesson planning and printing out my lesson plans. And back then I was printing them out on transparency so I could show them on the overhead projector. I'm sure there are people listening like, what is he talking about? Google it. It's I'm sure you've seen one before, but, and then this year I actually started teaching undergrads for the first time, and I'm teaching this semester pre-service teachers who are preparing to go into the elementary classroom. Mm-hmm. And specifically, I'm teaching them how to teach math, which is what I taught when I was in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I asked my students, you know, what's their biggest fear? What's the thing they worry about? And one of my students said, I worry that I'm going to have 30 kids in my class and I'm not going to be able to meet the individual needs of each student. And I said, okay, well, I don't know if this is going to be a popular answer. I hate to be that guy who's going to like, I don't want to bring it down, but chances are you're not going to be able to meet 30 kids exactly where they are. But that's why you do the whole teacher prep piece, is to kind of learn strategies to be able to group and to pair students up, to figure out strategies and techniques that will allow you to do that. Because the truth is, if you start trying to meet the needs of 30 individual students all at the same time, while we talk about it like it's an easy thing to do, mm-hmm. you'll burn out in a year or two. And I think for me, learning some of those strategies and learning how to kind of cope with the tidal wave that's constantly coming at you as a classroom teacher, that getting to that point where I finally didn't feel that way, where I could sit down at night and actually be like, wow, I can sit down and watch a TV show or mm-hmm. read a website or a book or do something. By the way, those days are long gone. I'm already back to like working all night, but I feel like that was a big step for me as a teacher, was learning some of those coping mechanisms and learning it's okay to, you know, reset expectations so that I'm not driving myself to the point where I know I'm not going to make it out of that hole.
Yeah. And that's the thing we need to constantly remind ourselves when we go back to the beginning of the school year, or we change maybe a job assignment or, you know, an environment where we worked at, like try not to fall back into those old habits of, you know, bringing papers home to grade. Cause when I taught English, especially, I was guilty of that. Right. And you know, just kind of have that off button, especially if you're in a job where there's a lot of paperwork, a lot of just sitting, you know, in front of the computer. You need to have that time where you're like, okay, I'm not going to sit at home and enter all this paperwork, right?
So, well, that last week I caught up on all my grading, and then 2 days later I was like, what just happened? I have four assignments worth. Like, it's all fun and games when you're assigning the work, but then when you have to grade it and give feedback, you're like, oh no, what's happening? You know, and for the first time in a long time, I'm like, I better keep up with this and not let it get away from me, because I won't be able to recover if I don't keep on top of it. So, but those are the things you learn over time. You know, it's my big fear is, you know, that's why I think the question you ask is such a valuable one, because new teachers, I mean, you see teachers are exiting our profession faster than we can add new teachers in. And my fear is the burden that these new teachers have is so heavy to carry. It's such a heavy load that if we're not basically coming in from the start and saying, hey, we need to equip you with ways to kind of manage your way through this, you know, we'll be losing them as well. And it goes beyond us, right? It's not just us. And you mentioned we were both co-authors in the 100 Stop Series project, you know, 100 Things Teachers Need to Stop Doing. And there's another one coming out with 100 Things School Leaders Need to Stop Doing. And I think as we start to shift from teachers to school leaders, it's ultimately what can leaders do to lighten that burden on our teachers? Because the pace right now is not sustainable.
Yeah, and let's talk about that book series now. Rick Jeter was the one who compiled the authors. So last fall, we submitted our chapters for the 100 Stop series for teachers, and that was published in May. And so you're also part of the 100 Stop Administrators book. You're saying this will probably come out early 2022. And so let's talk a little bit about those chapters that you've done for the teacher edition, and also what you've submitted for the administrator edition.
Yeah, one thing I loved in reading all the stories from the book was they are all such personal takes on a lot of these questions. And you know, I don't know if I'm going to say something that's not popular right now, but I don't agree with all 100 things that are in the book, right? But that's the nature of it, right? So it's some of them might really resonate with me, and other ones I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I need to stop doing that. I might write a counter chapter to that chapter, but but I think one thing you can't argue with is the passion that all these educators are bringing to the table with their stories. And so both of those chapters I was able to kind of pull from my career and really talk about experiences that happened to me that kind of led me to my belief in that particular chapter. Right. So for the teacher book, I wrote, teachers need to stop being afraid or feeling stupid if they don't know something. And that really stemmed from this idea that, you know, I think growing up, you probably had a similar experience to me where teachers never admitted they were wrong or said, I don't know something. Right. It was kind of like, well, because I said so. And, you know, I think we all experienced that kind of weird, just do as I do, not do as I say, not as I do, attitude sometimes from teachers. So I spoke to that one in the teacher book, and in the leader book, I wrote a chapter about educators not, or leaders not forgetting where they came from. And I think that's because of this, in, you know, this weird ladder we talk about in education. And you and I spoke about this before we went on the air. You know, I use this analogy in the story about how, imagine you were like this, this top, you know, chef, top end chef at a high end restaurant, and you are receiving accolades all the time about what amazing meals you serve. And eventually they come up to you and say, you know what? You're so good at being a chef, you should run the whole restaurant. And if it sounds like that doesn't make any sense, it's because it doesn't. But we do that in education all the time. We tell our great teachers, you should leave the classroom to go be an administrator, which has a completely different set of skills as being a teacher, other than the fact that you might be able to identify good instruction. And so the problems that lead to is, as you take out these great teachers and put them in these administrative roles, sometimes they get so buried in the work of being an administrator, they forget to kind of put themselves in the shoes of teachers and recognizing what some of the challenges are, because they're so buried in the administrivia.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, there's a lot of times, you know, you see administrators when you're a teacher, you only see them a couple times a year when they have to do the formal observations, right? And, you know, they might have the intention of getting into classrooms more, but they kind of are separating themselves from that teacher world, right? And I think the best administrators are those who say they're still teachers, or they're trying to cover classes. Sometimes they're trying to be in the classroom or teach, like you say, at the secondary, at the post-secondary level. So you're never not a teacher, really, when you're an educator.
100%. And, you know, I struggle sometimes with some of the terms we use, you know, lead learners and things like that. Like, but ultimately, if you're walking the walk, that's where I can respect that. You know, when you're in classrooms, when you're actually trying to learn about and keep up on best practices in as, you know, as classroom instruction is starting to evolve, that's where you really get me as far as, yes, I'm behind you as a school leader. You know, obviously my background is in technology. And one thing I've always found when we do work with schools is sometimes school leaders who are supposed to be evaluating teachers have no idea what they're supposed to be looking for when it comes to, you know, to effective use of instructional technology. And that's a conversation piece we often have in terms of how do we build capacity for school leaders so that they can be having those conversations, because that's what teachers are looking to them for, is leadership with regards to helping improve teaching and learning outcomes for, you know, all students.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree that that is something that, you know, I think there's always training that leaders can do on finding out like what they can find out, you know, how to support teachers of various subjects as well, or just any new innovations, like, you know, supporting when the schools went remote, right? That was new for everybody, but just being there is, you know, they might not have all the answers, but, you know, they can help find that out. So I wanted to talk to you about you starting and launching Ready Learner One, and then changemakeredu.org. You have some lessons. You have some resources there. Yeah. So talk to me about just what this all entails.
Yeah. So a few years ago, I actually co-founded Ready Learner One with a few of my colleagues. And, you know, it's funny. Originally, our vision was to kind of improve adoption timelines for emerging technologies in the K-12 and higher ed and corporate spaces. You know, we were super into like AR, VR, which is, we wrote Reality Bites, right? When we kind of company actually started as a book and then became a company. But then the pandemic hits and all of a sudden we're like, wow, maybe that was not the best time to be like pushing people to be trading headsets back and forth. Right. You know, and everyone thought, wow, virtual reality, this is the time. And we're like, I don't know. I don't want to take a headset from you and put it on because COVID and everything. And so we started to really take a look at, well, what are we actually trying to do beyond AR, VR, beyond esports, beyond trying to help schools implement these types of technologies at a much faster rate, because we believe that it's important for students to get the benefits of all of these technologies. Really what we realized was we were trying to improve professional learning. And so that led to a partnership with the Madison Institute. We co-founded Changemaker, changemakeredu.org, you mentioned the website. And there we have a professional learning platform where we actually have thrown two large conferences over the past two summers, each getting around 2,000 educators, free conferences. We had the 2021 National Teacher of the Year was our keynote this year. We had 20 state teachers of the year present for us. The idea is to, for lack of a better term, democratize professional development. So one problem we often have in professional development is there's not an equity of opportunity in terms of me bringing in high level, high quality presenters, right? If I'm a school who's in a low socioeconomic area or maybe a rural district, I don't have the funds to necessarily bring out top level speakers. So we're trying to provide that high quality professional development using a shared cost model where basically any school can participate, any school can micro-credential, any school can, you know, make these types of offerings available to their entire staff, regardless of what they teach. Like, so we're not just doing technology, we're doing, you know, anything from SEL to equity work to even working with, you know, school counselors, things like that. So we're really making a push to really try to reinvent how professional learning is done post pandemic.
Yeah. And I think that is something that has really kind of exploded in terms of people being able to take, you know, anything that they wish. And a lot of it is free through these organizations, right? Like you put on this conference in the summer. And I think it's becoming a lot more accessible. And we talked a little bit about, you know, in-person versus virtual conference. And, you know, I think I prefer the in-person, but it is, you know, you do have to pay when it's in-person, there, right?
So. Okay. So without question, I would always prefer, and even when I do work with schools, I prefer being in person and being in the room with them. Mm-hmm. But I also know that as we start to take a look at the cost models and the things that have to change as we start to shift, we want instruction for our students to be in person. But is it possible that we could still achieve some of the benefits of what we've been trying to do with our professional PD through a virtual environment? And are there additional benefits that didn't exist before through using a virtual model? And so we believe we've kind of nailed down the secret sauce, so to speak. And so we have a bunch of different flavors. Of models that we offer districts, whether it's, you know, custom professional development that's tailored to them, or it is using the offerings we have. We offer like 50 to 100 courses each year that can be taken that are available to our subscribers. We have a bunch of different models, and it's been interesting to kind of get feedback from districts in terms of what they like and what they want more of. And we've been able to kind of tailor the offerings even more to those needs.
And what's something that a lot of districts are saying they want more of is a common thread that you're seeing?
So interestingly, it's kind of pairing our offerings with what they already offer internally for their staff. Mm-hmm. So one place for all of that. So on our platform, we're actually providing channels for our schools where they can put up all of the stuff they already have. We can attach micro-credentials. We can have them, you know, take a look at who's taken what class and when and things like that. So I know certain districts that are our members will often give their teachers on a PD day, they'll say, go onto the platform and take one or two courses and we can run reports on who's taken what. And it could be either a single class, a series of courses that, you know, we have assessments that are attached to them because in certain states, they want to different states have different requirements as to what can count or continuing education hours. And so it's been kind of fun to navigate that process of figuring out what we need, how we need to kind of pivot a little bit. So we had to make it in certain states, you know, you can't fast forward the video because you need to have the guaranteed seat time. Others want an assessment attached to it. So it's been fun to kind of build out our set of offerings to match some of those needs at the state level.
And you're giving these possibilities to people in different states. So it's kind of a little bit on your company trying to find out the requirements as well. Is that a learning process for you all?
Right. So it's the process of So it's the process of working at the state level to find out how our courses can be taken by teachers who need continuing education credits for certification hours for that. Because obviously when you could do that, it's a more enticing thing to take part in, because now it's you're actually addressing a few different needs at once, not just professional learning needs, but also the needs of maintaining certification and things like that for some of your teachers.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, and we definitely want to provide something that they can benefit from and get that salary enhancement from. And, you know, I know like at the building level, a lot of the time it's that sit and get PD. It's the, you know, we're just going to give the same thing to everybody. And I think post-pandemic, a lot of principals are seeing, you know, we're going to tailor it to the needs, right? We have the new teachers, we have veteran teachers, we have people in the middle, we have people that are familiar with tech, people who aren't, right? We're not 100% doing that get anymore. So working with Ready Learner One and, you know, organizations like that definitely will help them kind of cycle through and also, you know, pair what you have with what they're already using. So
I think the thing we're the most proud of so far is that, you know, every district we met with, we've been able to meet their specific needs and that the platform is versatile enough to be able to handle that. So I think that's the thing we were worried about, is can we handle kind of like the 30 different children, going back to that at the beginning of the story. You know, if you have 30 different districts, can you meet those individual needs? And fortunately, with the platform, I think we can. So it's been really, it's been a fun ride so far. I'm excited to see where it goes. And, you know, you mentioned before, I'm also doing my doctoral work and teaching it at undergraduates. So it's been nice to kind of experience both being a student and being a teacher at the same time, as well as still kind of scratching that entrepreneurial itch.
And what are you doing your doctorate in?
So interestingly, it makes sense to kind of align it with the work we're doing with our platform. But right now it looks like I'm going to be doing my dissertation work on micro-credentialing.
Okay.
So I'm really fascinated by taking a step back. So when the pandemic hit, right, I was totally, I put on all that pandemic weight that everyone else put on because I was sitting on the couch just basically eating Ben and Jerry's and being depressed.
Yeah.
But we got a Peloton and then I started to really get into it. And I was like, wow, I'm doing yoga so that I can get a badge. Like I would never do yoga normally. I didn't even want to work out, but I was doing all this stuff to earn these digital badges. And I realized we can apply that same type of thinking to how we do professional learning, right? Mm-hmm. Because ultimately when we take a look at what universities are doing around the country, they are employing on top of their regular programs, they have both continuing education and micro-credentialed programs that they're offering for students. And during the pandemic, that was something that was becoming really popular. Mm-hmm. So much like we're talking about how we can reinvent what we do in the classroom using these kind of micro credentials, I think we're going to see the same thing happen with professional learning and teachers and kind of being credentialed in certain skill sets or things rather than kind of like, hey, I can use this one technology product. Mm-hmm. I would rather know where your expertise is and what you can bring to the table, because that not only makes you more valuable, you know, just as a commodity yourself, but also makes you more valuable to your school. It makes you more valuable to your students. And I hate to put it, I hate to make it sound mercenary or anything like that, but it makes you more marketable as a teacher. And I feel like a lot of teachers feel like they're stuck doing what they're doing. And I think making this shift over to micro credentials actually helps them not feel like they need to go take on a whole doctoral program or a master's degree to do something, but can really focus on the things they're passionate about and develop those skills out. And that actually makes it easier for you to be found for projects and opportunities that match up with those particular skill sets.
Yeah, I get that. That's a great way to, you know, have those things to put on your resume, to have those skill sets to align with a job that you're looking for, as opposed to, you know, spending all the money on a 2+ year graduate program. So I really hope, I know I interviewed somebody else on the podcast who works with micro-credentialing at the university level, and I hope that's going to take off more in terms of teacher and the PD, and, you know, that more and more districts will be looking at that.
I could probably guess who it was too, but I'll guess off of
you. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about VR and AR a little bit, you know, the titles of the books that you've written, and, you know, I just attended PD in my district using that. I have not actually used it in the classroom. So it's kind of taken off after I left the classroom. And so talk to me a little bit about just your research for the book and what people can learn from kind of diving into the VR and AR world.
So, you know, I feel like I knew just about as much about VR as everyone else when I started the project, like what I've seen in pop culture and, you know, Google Cardboard and things like that, that weren't actually really VR. And when I finally got to dive into both VR and AR, which I think is something we're all familiar with, but we may not just realize it's AR, you know, AR is augmented reality, is what we use when we do Snapchat filters, or if you play Pokemon Go or something like that. It's basically taking digital content and putting it over the real world. VR is a fully digital environment that we're working in. And while Google Cardboard would have qualified, we often talk, when we talk about VR, we're talking about immersive VR. So where you wear like a VR headset, like an Oculus Quest or an Oculus Go, HTC Vive. And that's the type of thing that not as many people have exposure to. And it's the type of thing that once you get exposure to it, it totally changes your perception on what is possible in our classrooms. And so what we did was we created a learning framework called the ABC framework. It's absorb, blend, and create. And we aligned different experiences from both AR and VR to these different aspects of the framework, and with stories from educators who've been doing it in their classroom. So when the book came out, this is right when the pandemic hit, we were on the road with like a whole set of VR headsets that we were traveling around and getting people into it and having them create content and really getting their hands wet in terms of using virtual reality. And then that kind of stopped. We're still doing a lot of work in the VR space, but I just think educators who give themselves the opportunity to try out virtual reality or dip their toes in are going to be amazed at what you can do. And I mentioned yesterday, one you know, one experience, even if you were to look up the video online just to see what it's like, the Anne Frank house experience.
Yeah.
I mean, when you put on that headset, you are actually navigating through Anne Frank's house as it appeared at the time that she lived there with her family. And while you're picking up different artifacts from around the house, you're hearing a young girl reading portions of the diary. It's very emotional. It helps create a lot of empathy, a lot of these experiences. There's another one called Becoming Homeless, where you go through the separate, these various stages of losing your job and becoming homeless and seeing how people look at you. And it's a really thought-provoking technology in a way that I don't think a lot of technologies have been able to achieve before, because it allows you to put yourself in the shoes of someone else and experience what it's like. It's one thing for me to describe to you what something's like. It's another thing for you to live it. And that's what I think VR allows you to do. But on top of that, VR also allows you to create content in thin air and just reimagine what your workspace looks like. And we've been able to create objects in thin air and then print them out using a 3D printer. So you're literally creating something out of nothing. And there's a lot of power to that technology. If I'm being honest, I think AR is actually going to have more of an impact in our classrooms in a shorter time span than VR. I think we'll see AR make more of an impact more immediately. And there's already been a ton of mobile technologies you could download right to your phone that let you see different things. Recently, I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I went down to Black Wall Street, which happened in 1921, I believe. And rather than do like a formal tour, I actually downloaded an app where there were markers, AR markers out in the street where I can hold my phone over them, listen to audio from a narrator, and then see objects come right up out in front of me in the street.
Wow.
Even like a theater where I had to actually walk across the street to be able to fit it all into my phone screen to see a theater where it stood before it was burned down. And it's an experiential learning that I would love our kids to have. It takes the classic field trip and turns it into something totally new and real for our students. So we talk about all the time about how do we kind of enhance the learning experiences we already have for our kids. And that's one way of doing it, through technology.
Yeah. And my concern is just the funding for those headsets and being able to implement it. Because I would imagine in a typical elementary school that, you know, maybe they have a classroom set of the headsets. And are there like specific organizations that schools can maybe apply to grants through to get more headsets for their school?
So I'll start off really quickly by just saying that the AR experiences that I've been talking about, almost all of them are free. So those are just free for downloading on existing devices that you may have. VR, what's interesting is a few years ago, the price of getting a quality virtual reality setup would be somewhere in the neighborhood of like $2,000 per setup, because you'd have the computer plus the headset. It was static. There's wires everywhere. Now, with the Oculus Quest, the prices on these things have gone down to like $200 a device.
Okay.
So now the computer is built into the headset itself. Okay. So the price has gone down dramatically. Where there's still some question is age, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, most of those Oculus type apps, they recommend for age 13 or older. So for our younger students, they don't really get the benefit of it because it's not recommended for them to be using it. So I would be hard pressed to say, hey, go out and get 30 headsets for your elementary school when ultimately even Oculus isn't saying that that's okay. But as they get more data and research, it's showing that, you know, it shed some light onto the effects for the use of children. And I think we've been seeing a lot of success in some of the schools who've been employing these technologies. You know, what I would love personally is to see some of these companies, these VR companies, make more of a commitment to the education space. I think a lot of them are so focused on business that they're not an enterprise, that they're not really saying, wow, this can be a total game changer for how we teach and how we learn. And in fact, there's some products out there. Chimera is one, which actually is allowing school to happen in this hybrid of virtual and in-person. So I could put on the headset. I see the teacher right in front of me, like I would if I was in the classroom. But if I look around, I see all the students alongside of me, and they're all virtual and at home as well, but I still see representations of them. So there's a camera in the room with the teacher that's putting the image of the teacher in, like I could be in front of my classroom teaching, but yet all my students may be at home, or half might be at home and half might be connecting virtually. But for those students who are attending virtually, it looks like they're sitting directly in front of the teacher and they can still look around and interact with their classmates.
Okay. I didn't know that was out there. So I'll definitely.
There's a ton of stuff. It's amazing. Yeah. There's a ton of stuff out there.
Well, talk to me a little bit about some tech conferences that you're hoping to speak at and some of the speaking that maybe you've done recently. You know, you talked a little bit about a few places that you went to. I know we talked some about ISTE and, you know, have you spoken at ISTE in the past and, you know, kind of what that entails?
Yeah, I've done a bunch of ISTEs. I know the deadline for ISTE applications, if you're listening, October 1st is the deadline for ISTE applications for New Orleans in 2022. I'm going to be at FETC in January and TCA in February. I'm supposed to be in Iceland at the UTIS conference in November. And I was a featured speaker at the iTech Iowa. So that's the ISTE affiliate for Iowa, which was supposed to be in a couple of weeks, but it's been rescheduled to April. Mm-hmm. But yeah, trying to go out and spread the good word and help educators reimagine what they can do in their classrooms using some of these amazing new technologies. And it's weird, right? This is such a weird time in education, right? Because we're just coming out. We're not even fully out of it yet from COVID. But I do feel like there's been this entire shift in terms of what teachers are capable of with using technology, because so many of them were forced into this position of having to use technology for the first time to actually teach. And now it's like, wow, they're a lot further. Like, we probably moved two decades in a year in terms of teacher capacity for technology use. So I think there are teachers who right now they cannot think about anything new because there's just still, we're still in it and it's still overwhelming. But I feel like pretty soon we're going to get to a point where teachers are going to say, okay, if this can help me and if this can improve things for my students, improve teaching and learning outcomes, I'm in. Let's try it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, we're really excited to see what happens as we move ahead.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there's always people that have, you know, needs and they, you know, they have questions about how to use this and that product. And you know, I think there's always going to be learning in terms of, like you said, VR, AR, just different tech tools to use for the classroom, because it's always changing. Something we're using today is not necessarily going to be in use in 5 years.
I mean, it's amazing. Even, you know, our book came out last year and the technology's already evolved since then. So it's technology, fortunately, will always be relevant as technology itself, but the specific technologies continue to evolve to meet the needs of learners and, you know, their shifting needs as well. So it's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, out of everything we talked about on the podcast today, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
One thing I'd like listeners to remember. Well, I think I'll go all the way back to that first question. Just remember, don't, at a certain point, you can't put the burden of everyone on yourself. You have you have to make sure to keep yourself healthy, to employ self-care, and to, you know, make sure you're going to be there for your students. Because ultimately, if you're not taking care of yourself, you can't be there for your kids. And that's ultimately the most important thing, is that you're taking care of yourself. You're making sure you're giving yourself what you need when you need it. Whether that's additional learning, whether that's no learning at all, it's really taking stock and kind of inventory of what you personally need in order to be successful. Because I think too often we're so driven by our students and by the work we want to do that we forget that, you know, if we're not doing that maintenance, we're just dooming ourselves to a cycle of failure.
That's so important to remember. Where can people find you online and connect with you?
People can find me at jessielubinsky.com. You could also find me on Twitter and Instagram at jlubinsky. I also am a co-host of the Partial Credit podcast with Donnie Piercy and Jeffrey Heil. That can be found at partial.credit or wherever you find your podcasts. My work at ReadyLearner One, you can find us at ReadyLearner.One or at changemakeredu.org.
Okay, great. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it. And if this episode resonates, especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.